Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on this episode of the podcast, I'm chatting to director Rasmus Klosterbro about his debut feature, the claustrophobic horror thriller, Cutterhead. We go into various details about the movie, including the challenges of making a film a mile underground and how the cast and crew dealt with those conditions. Also, how he managed to secure permission to make the film by the Copenhagen Metro, the political dimensions of the movie, and his drive to create as realistic an environment as possible for the film. But before we get to the interview, just a quick reminder so you never miss an episode of New Horror Express, please do rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Plus, you can check us out on Spotify, Radio Public, and wherever good podcasts are available. But now, on to the interview with Rasmus. Hello, Rasmus. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. So we're going to talk about your debut feature, Cutterhead.
Yeah. So
tell us a little bit about Cutterhead. Tell us a little bit about the plot and tell us a little bit about how the origins of the film, where was the first seed of the idea of making this picture?
Sure. Well, Cutterhead is it's a tiny disaster movie, mm-hmm. or a survival film, and it takes place in the metro construction in Copenhagen. We have right now the last bits of the construction going on for a big metro line. The movie takes place on one of these machines that digs the tunnels, a boring machine, and it's about this woman Rie, who's a PR worker in the metro conglomerate, and she's down there to do some portraits and some pictures for to show this underground world to the world on the upstairs on the ground in the city, and an accident happens. And she gets stuck in this pressure chamber in the front of this machine with Baran, who's a worker in the tunnel worker, and Ivo, who's a cutterhead mechanic, so sort of a specialist there. And they're some very different people with very different backgrounds, and they're in this progressively smaller spaces. So it's a really claustrophobic experience. You're meant to be part of the physical experience through the film, it has to do with this idea of not having enough space or not having not enough oxygen for everybody, and then the question is who gets to live. Yeah, and then obviously also it's these very large constructions. I guess I can get back to that, talking about why I wanted to do the film in the first place. Yeah. But it's like a microcosm of Europe underground. So it's in the middle of Copenhagen, and it's basically on the street. But then you have these very large, what looks like a moon base or something like that, these work sites. And in there, it's not really Copenhagen. It's something else. It's more like a combined European work site, and they could be anywhere in the world, I guess, or anywhere in Europe. But it just means that it's not a Danish setting really. It's more like a universal European setting in the work sites. And that's actually what got me started. This idea that I wanted to investigate what's behind these walls and who is there and who works there. And I went underground with the idea of making a story about Europe, but then I came out of the underground with a disaster.
So it was actually the metro itself, and just thinking about the kind of microcosm of society that's living underground, making this thing that inspired the film, that inspired the first idea of like, oh, what?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely was. And then I guess in everything I do, I'm looking for like two legs to stand on. One should be about the world, about who we are in the world and how the world is in us. And the other leg, it should be something that has to do with the cinematic language. So I'm looking for things, part of life or part of a situation that you couldn't really write, but that you can really express or feel through cinema. And then one of the first research trips we had, I started out really with a collective process with a lot of the creative team that I'm working with, I've worked with before. And we went on a lot of research trips underground. And one of the first ones was going to the tunnel boring machine. And that is actually going from the air and from the city and into this work site, which is a really a brutal aesthetic. It's like the city's been scraped off the ground and then you just have a big hole. And then you go down into this hole and it's like a concrete cathedral. And when you hit the ground on the bottom, it's like you are transported to another place. You might as well be on the moon or something. And then you go into the tunnel and with these unfinished tunnels, it's more like the train is not this smooth, comfortable ride. It's more like a screaming sensation, snailing through the train, through the tunnels on this work train. Mm-hmm. And then you arrive on this submarine machine. It's more like, it feels like maybe a submarine or a spaceship or something. And then in the front of this machine is this pressure chamber, because the cutter head, the front of the machine is under pressure. That's something that is really there. And I guess just on the research trip, having this experience going underground into these progressively smaller rooms or spaces, I had this physical experience. And that was the other leg to stand on. So I had this idea of the microcosm of Europe, and then the other leg was this physical experience. And I really, from an early point on, I was there with my co-writer, Mikkel. And I think he was the first one to say that we have to do a disaster film here. There's no discussion. It's too good not to do it.
Well, to talk about the first leg that you were talking about, the microcosm of Europe. So it seems like the central three characters, Rhee is a Danish journalist, Evo is Croatian, and Baran is Eritrean. And so was it just literally that there is this microcosm, there is all these kind of nationalities mixing that made it kind of political that way? Or did you make it more to be a more pointed political commentary? Or did it just literally come out of the fact that there is all these different nations working on this massive project?
Well, I guess in the reality or in the... Usually it's more divided. It's more so you have all the Italians working on one team and all the Danish working on another team, and they have each their specialty. But you also have, and in that case, you actually have three pretty distinct classes. You have the administrative class who are working above ground, and they have a more comfortable life. They have long contracts and they're paid, I guess, fairly well. And then you have this technical specialist who work underground, who have kind of long contracts, but more like 1 or 2 months or maybe 3 months at a time. And then they get, prolonged or expanded there. They have their contracts expanded and they get paid fairly well. And they live in these temporary, what's it called? I guess, little settling for workers on the outskirts of the town.
Right, yeah.
But they get sort of taken care of pretty well. And then you have the manpower who are, I think, actually hired technically in Dublin, most of them, and in some places in Portugal where you have these tax possibilities, I guess you could call it. So it's the cheapest labor you can find in Europe. And it's mainly African migrants, and mainly from Portugal. So meaning that they speak Portuguese, meaning that they're mainly from specific parts of Africa. And so you actually have these three pretty distinct classes in the construction. But I guess what I'm trying to do here is say that we have one of the manpower workers who is in this case he's a Danish refugee who has a job there, which is a likely situation. But I'm having him sort of step one up one class from the manpower to the specialist, to put him in this room with Ivo. So it's really it's almost there, but I guess I pushed it a little bit further.
Make the kind of connection.
Yeah, sure. But also because when I think about the survival genre or the disaster genre, it's usually the temperament of the character that defines who gets to live or who deserves to live or who has the chance to survive. Like who's the selfish character and who wants to sacrifice themselves and traits like that. But I also wanted to bring in what is your position in society and does that play into this really extreme situation of survival. So I guess that's a way to work within the genre, but also try something a little bit different.
It's an interesting in because it's like you would imagine in an extreme circumstance like that, but a lot of those things get stripped away in class and privilege and.
Yeah, exactly. But what if it doesn't? What if you have it innately, or what if it's in some ways it stays there? You know, the entitlement if there's not enough oxygen, if there's only enough of oxygen for one person, then how do you justify, you know, grabbing the oxygen?
That's true. And if you've had privilege your whole life, and you might think that you deserve to live more, you know.
That's... Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but that's the question I'm asking. Yeah. I guess, or that was the question that we came to working on the film.
You mentioned, I mean, obviously you've mentioned you're making it in that kind of disaster movie mold. You said small scale disaster. I know it's quite a small kind of claustrophobic film. It really does focus in on these three characters. You mentioned submarine a few times, feeling like a submarine. Is that the kind of movies you had in mind? Did you think of submarine movies like Das Boot?
Yeah, I saw it years ago. But I watched it again, Das Boot, and also a lot of different claustrophobic films like The Cave and Buried and all these kinds of just to do a research and see what would be in the minds of the audience going into this kind of film. But yeah, the Das Boot is really a that's a prime example of claustrophobic survival, and it's also political, I guess. So that had an attraction as well.
You said you worked very closely with your crew in terms of developing the picture, and I know that you've worked before with the lead actress Christine Sonderes. At what point in the development did you work with the actors, and particularly Christine in this role of Ree? Was it as the script was developing, or like did you present a script and then there was improvisation and things built on top of the script?
No, more like the other way around. We started out with this idea that we could do a film in the metro construction, because we filmed half of the picture underground in the ongoing construction. And before we knew we could do that, we had to test it out. So that was actually the first thing we did. Also because I like to have a cinematic foundation for what I do when I go into the script writing process. So I want to know a lot about the physical spaces and how the bodies work in these spaces and the rhythm and the aesthetics of the, and the, and also the productional possibilities of the film before I really go into the script writing phase. So actually what we did was we made a character, Christine and I, through improvisation, which is a, it's a process that I've worked with a lot. I've worked a lot with improvisation and I guess you could call it video sketching. And then we found her character, and then I used her as a research object to make her, you know, run into the workers and do these interviews and explore the physical spaces and also the character relations. And actually with her, we found Ivo, and we found also someone who could be Baran. Ivo is a Croatian actor in the film, but he's also a real person who was part of this improvisation process. I worked for I guess a month with Christine and with people in the construction to get inside the minds of these people who I really don't know. I didn't know them to begin with, and I didn't know what sort of what was on their minds and what was important to them. So trying not to only go down with my idea of who we are in the world and who is an Italian or a Croatian worker in the world and who is a and how do they see themselves in this situation. I try to work as much as I can with these people, real people, I guess you could say, but using Christine as a tool to investigate. And that's getting into the characters and this community, but it's also experimenting with the physical spaces. So before we wrote a script, we both had the character improvisations, and we had a collection of video sketches. So it's more like experiments, because from a really really early on, I knew that the backbone of the story would be the size of the physical space, going from, you know, the city and where you have the sky and the birds and trees and fresh air, and then going all the way to zero. So I investigated all these possible spaces through the construction and through the tunnel and the machine and the pressure chamber and the cutter head and all the spaces that come after that. And on the basis of that video of collection of video sketches, we got the funding for the film and we started writing the script.
So it sounds like getting the realism was very important to you. Have you screened it for any of the workers or any of the people at the Copenhagen Metro?
Sure, but actually we didn't do a screening for the workers yet. But we will. It's still in cinemas here, and we're trying to organize a screening. But I know that that some of the tunnelers, the engineers, they organize the screening, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they say. Mm-hmm. We had a really close collaboration with the head engineer of the tunnel construction, mm-hmm. and he was a big part of getting this realism. Also, basically, I could ask him what's the worst thing that could happen, mm-hmm. and he would go on for talking about all the things they do to prevent these things from happening, but also pointing out what would be a dramatic situation. And he was a big part of getting it realistic.
Yeah. I was a little curious, just in terms of how did you get permission in the first place? Were Copenhagen Metro not a little concerned that your movie would do to them what Jaws did to sharks?
Well, there was actually one critic who wrote that in the when it came out here in Denmark.
All right.
He as a headline, he wrote, "It does to Metro travels what Jaws did to bathing holidays." And of course, that was their concern, their main concern. But also, they were just. I think that our agreement was we are a group of artists coming into an artistic piece of work, and they are a big organization, and it's usually very closed and very sort of bureaucratic. But the deal we did with them was to try and see if an organization like them could fit in an artistic project, because it's just so, it's so huge. It's been going on for a decade, and it's I don't know how many billions they spend on it, and it's just such a large enterprise, and in that they might as well fit what they can. So that was, I guess, that was the challenge. And then they gave us completely free range. They, as long as we didn't slow them down, slow the production down, and as long as we didn't get hurt, then we could do basically whatever we wanted. So they didn't have any, as just when they signed off, they got to read the script, and they got to be informed about what we did in the campaign or around the film, but they never had any say over it as such. But they also got to, we took out all the logos from all the companies that are, it's a myriad of companies who are building this. And it's, so it's not only the Metro company here in Copenhagen, it's also all these construction conglomerates. But we just took out everything so we couldn't identify single companies. But that was actually great. I like not to have all these logos all over. Yeah, but they signed off all the way from Copenhagen to Rome, because the construction companies or the main construction companies are Italian. So a lot of people had to put their signature on it, and I'm actually not sure how it went all the way through, but it did.
Well, go all the way through to the top. That's
yeah,
absolutely great. I take it you were saying that you worked closely with the head engineer. I take it there was a lot of technical research and preparation that had to be done before filming, because it seems like, you know, very technically strenuous project in terms of setup, and health and safety must have been absolutely paramount for yourself and the actors.
Yeah, it was. We had this introductionary course for actually the same course as the Metro workers have. So we had a little safety briefing, and we were taught how to use these rescue devices. But besides that, it didn't feel dangerous. But we also had these chaperones with us all the time from the construction, who were safety officers. And they became part of the film crew more than anything, and they were sort of our guides there. But besides that, it was a tough shoot, because we couldn't, when you go underground, even though you're actually technically still in your own neighborhood where you live, but you are an hour, it takes an hour to get from the underground inside the tunnel all the way to the ground, to the surface. And you couldn't really sit anywhere in the tunnels, and it was cold, or either it was cold or it was really hot. So it wasn't your average film shoot. It really did feel like going to going to another planet. And then when you came back to the surface, you were sort of shocked that you were still in your city.
Yeah. You talked earlier about trying to provide the kind of physical experience for the viewers of the film, of that kind of claustrophobia. I take it you're not claustrophobic yourself, because, I mean, that must be very physically and mentally intense to be in such a confined space.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly sure, but I guess that, but yeah, we started on the research in the beginning, and I could sit there in the end of the tunnel in the front of the machine and not completely panic. But it was actually easier when we had a job to do and we were focused on that. It was a lot easier. It sort of crept up on you when you were sitting still, and you had all these ideas of what could happen. It worked out. I also asked Christine when we started out whether she was claustrophobic or not, and she. Mm-hmm. She also said, "I don't know. Let's find out." But she was all right as well. But we had, I guess, we had a couple of people from the more technical side of the film crew who actually said just up front that they couldn't do it because they knew that they wouldn't be able to. So we had to swap someone out. I did a film on a fishing boat once, and I found out that I really get seasick. But this time around, I was okay.
This time you were fine, and the other actors were fine as well.
Yeah, I guess it turned out. It was, yeah, that was pretty lucky. But in some way, it's you have this, there is all these safety measures, and they're very visible all the time. So you get this idea that everything is safe and, you know, what could go wrong. And yeah, so you have this idea that it's actually pretty safe.
In terms of the other actors, how did they come on to the project? Kresmir and Samson,
I was for Ivo's role, I was in the beginning, I was working with a first timer or a non-actor from the construction and sort of built the character with him. But then I knew at some point that I had to swap him for someone who could be a more steady part of the film production. And so I went looking for first an Italian or a Croatian actor, because they have this, it comes out of shipbuilding industry, this tunneling industry. So those would be the two areas that I could look. And actually, yeah, then I had a lot of different options. And one of them was this guy called Salvatore Striano, who was in the a very great film called Caesar Must Die, where he was in prison at the time, I guess. And he came over, and it turned out he didn't speak one word of English, which was problematic because none of us spoke any Italian. So this idea that the Italians on the ground didn't speak English turned out to be, yeah, even also true for the actors. So we looked in some other places also, and when Kresimir came up, I was really convinced that he would fit in really well. And he's a big star in Croatia, but we haven't seen him so much here in Denmark. And then Samson, he was
I saw that he has quite like an extensive resume and
I think he has he did a couple of films that had sort of an international reach. But mainly he's just what's it called? He's like
kind of homegrown celebrity.
Exactly. He breaks a lot of hearts in Croatia, I guess. So Samson was, but he's a really professional actor. He's worked in so many productions, and I guess not many of them has been as small and intense as ours. Mm-hmm. So I guess he was a little surprised when he came here, and we're just, you know, six people, here's your costume, let's go underground and get going. But he was really great, and very his experience was great, because this is also this is my first feature film, and it's Christine's and definitely Samson's first feature film, and so his experience and he was really quick to absorb this character of Ivo, and that was a big help for us. But Samson he was also part of this process of improvisation, finding his character, and he built a lot of the things on stuff he knows, so situations he's been through or has experience with as a refugee. He's an Eritrean refugee living in Denmark. Mm-hmm. And he's been in a couple of experimental theater plays. And that's how he came on my radar. He was part of the process from a pretty early point. But this is also his first film.
So yeah, because kind of doing the research and looking up the different actors and yourself, and it's Samson. That was your film was the only credit I could find for him. Online, but obviously it does have an acting background. You're saying experimental theater.
Yeah, a little bit. He's used his own experience as a refugee a lot in these plays, and that's how he came up. But he really, he really took to it. So he's trying to expand as an actor.
And was it? Did it feel different that being a feature film? I know you've done a few short films. I think you've done about three short films, as far as I can see. Was it different doing a feature film? Did it feel different? Was there any kind of, did it feel more difficult? How was the experience of that?
Well, the main thing that was really great about this process was that we got to do the foundation for the film in a cinematic, in the cinematic language. We got to find and build the whole story on what worked as a physical experience. And we were really lucky to get a very generous grant from the Film Institute here in Denmark. So that was the main difference, actually having a budget to work for, especially in the development phase. And then also just, I guess there's a bigger audience for feature films than for short films. So it's been really great to have it, you know, come into the theaters and have a real life there. You get a much more raw feedback from audiences and also from festivals. That's been really great. And also just working on a longer format gives a chance to explore, like go more in depth with your characters and the whole movement of the story. So that was great. But I guess that the whole, you know, size of the project was actually pretty small. It was only, I think we had 16 days all in all, half of it underground and then the other half in the studio. So it isn't like it's been a very large production as such.
And did the actual shoot itself take very, I mean, with all the kind of technical aspects of it and the confined space, was the shoot itself quite long or quite short?
Well, it was short but stretched out over a long period of time, because we could only shoot in the beginning it was on Sundays from 4 in the afternoon until midnight, because that was the only time that they didn't, you know, work on the machine, so there was space for us to go there. And some other times we could do some shots that where they were meant to be working and we could sort of just tag along. But then we also did, in between Christmas and New Year's, we did some more whole days, because then they were, all the workers were on holidays in their home countries. So it wasn't a lot of days, but it was stretched out over a long period of time. And then we have a longer stretch in the studio where we could be more focused in, but it's still in these tiny spaces. We just had them in the above ground instead of underground.
It must be really good to come. I imagine it must be really feel really good to come above ground after spending all that time down in confined spaces.
Yeah, for me it was great. I was talking with Christine especially about it, and because it was really tough underground, so we were talking about just hang on, because in a few days we're gonna go above ground and it's gonna be much nicer, and you're gonna have your own little room and a chair you can sit in, and lunch is gonna be in a most civilized manner, and actually that was probably true for all the crew, because we had them all, we could be on the outside of the scene sets of the sets, but for the actors, they had to, I guess the scenes we did on the studio was even more claustrophobic than the scenes we did underground, so it wasn't an easy shoot, even though it was in the studio for the actors, but of course we had a lot more control, and yeah, I guess in many ways it was more civilized, but also even tougher.
In terms of the filming, was it, I mean, how many people could fit down there? Was it just kind of yourself, the actors, the cinematographer?
Yeah, I can send you a clip where I pass a phone around to see how many people we are in this tiny space. But it was the three actors and then me and the cinematographer and sound recordist and the assistant cinematographer and then the what's it called, the first AD. How many is that? Seven people, something like that. Wow. So that was the maximum we could be there, because we couldn't fit in any more people. But that would be people also standing outside the pressure chamber on this little balcony or on the stair. So it was really tight, and you couldn't really, you know, whenever it was time for lunch, it was just, you know, okay, now it's lunch, and then someone opens a backpack and you have some sandwiches and then you go back to work. But I can send you this little video where we look around our little set.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, send that clip along and then I can include it with the episode so the listeners can see just how confined the space was.
Sure, I'll do that.
Wow. Your previous films, this is obviously a kind of disaster movie. Your previous shorts have not been so kind of genre specific. Why was it that you decided to make your first feature a kind of genre pick?
Well, it was born out of the space of the physical experience, and I looking at my own history or I don't know, childhood or as an audience, I've been obsessed with all kinds of genre films and especially with Cronenberg's films and also just everything that has to do with science fiction or also a lot of horror. So, but I had that sort of in the back of my mind when I've been doing these short films and in some weird way it came to the more conscious part of my mind when we came down underground one of the first times, because I think it's something that I've wanted to do and had an idea of that I was going to do at some point when the timing was right and the project was right, but then I guess it just came before I expected. But it sort of fits, I guess, to me. Genre is more, it's more of an analysis that I come to in the process of making a film, because I want to have this physical or cinematic qualities, and I want to base the film on that. And actually, coming to think of it, there's a lot more space for those qualities or those fascinations in genre cinema. Yeah. Than there is in maybe the more kitchen sink drama, which is basically what my film education has been. These character driven sort of close relationship dramas, which I also love, and I also love working with. But I realized that genre cinema has a much bigger like field of expectation for physical experiences, and that has a big attraction to me. So I definitely don't feel like I'm that this was a one-off. I'm gonna consider working more focused on different, but just as long as I have an idea that there's a genre, it's actually a big help. But it's not like I know a lot of people, and I know a lot of great filmmakers who are very much into genre cinema and into like specific fields in different genres, and they're very focused on making that kind of genre. But to me, it's a more organic thing.
It's very interesting listening to you say that, and it's a very interesting perspective, because I feel like there is a lot of directors who are genre enthusiasts who like to plow a certain furrow in genre. And yeah. There's also a lot of directors that you read interviews or you listen to interviews or what or whatever, where they're the complete opposite. They're very snippy about genre and they try to kind of stay at arm's length from it at all times and you know, stay away. So it's interesting that you're gonna, you know, it's
but that's just silly. I think it has to do with how you see yourself. Like, am I one of those people? I guess if you're a snippy, what did you call it? Snippy director?
Snippy, kind of snobby, or
If you don't want to see yourself in that crowd, but I think if you're thinking like that, it's just, I don't know, you're not into it. You're thinking a lot too much about how you look from the outside, because I think, and they're also losing out, because I've been traveling to a lot of festivals, and I think around 50-50 has been, half of them has been purely genre festivals, and the other half has been more in the art house or like the internet world cinema field. And I must say that I really love the genre festival, and especially the audiences, because they're so dedicated that they come in to have a good time and to get both to watch a great story and a piece of art, but also to have a ride of some kind. And I think that's really reflects sort of what I really love about cinema, is that you get to have experiences where your mind not necessarily is the main filter that you get everything into. You don't have to understand, or sometimes you can just be, you know, shocked or shaken strangled a little bit by the experience. And I think that ties completely into what I think cinema can do.
I think a lot of these genre festivals have a much more, certainly the audiences have a much more broad perspective on what certain genres are. I think people from the outside have a very set idea of what horror or sci-fi or whatever is. Mm. And, you know, it is much broader than that. And you go to a horror film festival and it's not just all slashers or something. There is a array of different types of horror. And that's one of the things I was going to ask as well, because I saw that it seemed to be a real mixture, like you said, of art house film festivals, genre film festivals. You've played at a number of horror film festivals. Do you see the film as a horror?
We made a very conscious decision about how we wanted to put the film into the market, into the cinemas, and in that case we definitely placed it as a tiny catastrophe film, but also as a horror. So if you look at the trailer, we're really trying to be very clear that this is a physical experience, and claustrophobia has a lot to do with it. So in my mind, that is a horror, but it's more of a subtle horror. It has to do with the feeling of not having enough oxygen. Can you actually get that into the audience, down into the rows in the cinema? It more than that, it is the, you know, evil characters being evil, like innately evil. So it's I think in context with all the other films I've played up against at the festivals, it's been very different. But maybe I think that also comes from this, that it wasn't conceived as a horror to begin with, but it went that way. But I think I've experienced audiences at festivals who've had a very open mind, and really were welcoming to whatever the film would give them, and just be, you know, go for the ride. But I've also tried people who had a very strict idea of what a horror film was and what qualified a film to be at a horror festival. And so, yeah, but I guess that there are a more puritanical way of looking at the genre as well.
Yes, I think there is a set of a section of horror fans that are very puritanical about what horror is, and there's all sorts of weird debates about films like The Witch or American Psycho or like all sorts of different films are kind of debated about whether they're a horror or not, and I would include them as horror, and I would include a lot of things as horror that some people are very much against.
Yeah, but it's a great discussion. I think, what do you think about a film like Climax, the Gaspar Noé film?
Yes, I think that's a horror film.
Yeah, me too, but I'm not sure that everybody agrees. It's definitely a horrific experience.
It is, yes, it's a... You talk about physical experiences, and that is a very intense film. And mind you, all of Gaspar Noé's films are
right. But that's that's definitely also a director that I look to who does cinematic experiences, just above and beside telling a story.
And you were at the premiered at the. This same film festival that Climax played, well, one of the festivals Climax played at Neuchâtel in Switzerland.
Yeah. And David Cronenberg was the head of the jury, so that was the reason why I insisted on starting out there.
Yeah. I was going to ask that actually. I was interested if that was pre-planned that you why specifically you wanted to premiere there.
Yeah, I guess if you look, it's a great genre festival, and it is definitely one of the most sort of important festivals if you look at it from where you start out with a film like this. But it's not as prestigious as other festivals that we could have waited for, like the old A festivals, and stuff like that. So it was actually kind of a I had to insist very clearly that we should start out on this festival, because I wanted to place it as a genre film. I didn't want it to have to be an art house film with a genre twist. I really wanted to see how it would play out there, and then just having Cronenberg as the head of the jury. And me being a big fan of him and his films, then yeah, that made it that was the decision.
And you must have been very proud that you were nominated for the festival prize, the Narcisse Award.
Sure, definitely, and it's also just speaking to the programmers who took it in there, and they have actually been. Really helpful in getting the film to other places as well, because I didn't know that before, but obviously these people speak with each other, and they're really good at calling each other and getting advice for films to fit into their programs, maybe have something that doesn't that is a little bit outside what they normally do, and then so they've been really they've been good ambassadors of the film as well.
And you weren't at all annoyed with Gaspar Noé that Climax took the award?
I loved it. I had such a great experience watching it. So I was just, I was okay with it. It was just such a great film. But we beat him at another festival in Strasbourg a few months after. So I guess where we also took the audience award. So I guess we, yeah. We followed that film a lot in the beginning on all the same festivals.
Okay. He won the first round, but you got him in the return match.
Exactly. Yeah. Even on his home ground, his home turf, in France. Yeah.
Got him in his own backyard.
Exactly.
That's impressive. Yeah. I mean, as it is your debut feature, you must be you know, we must be very pleased with all the festivals it's played. It's picked up a bunch of nominations for awards, you know.
I'm really happy with it, and it actually also that it's gotten a lot of very different acknowledgements. So it's gotten both like audience awards and the latest one we had was a critics award, and also there's the music that we have the composer who's called Søs Gunvor Ryberg. I think she did a great and she made a very special soundtrack for the film, and she actually also got an award for the film. So I think that overall these festivals we've been to, they've people have picked out a lot of good qualities in the film that I'm really happy about. It hasn't just been all one thing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm really happy that people look at it as a genre film and not just another art house film. Because it sort of gives me a little bit more room to wriggle. I don't know if that makes sense for what I'm doing next. Like having this having shown that I can make something that is a physical experience. That is really helpful to me for the future projects.
It's interesting, just like what we were talking about, you know, some people seem to worry about being cornered as a genre director. You seem to be more concerned about being cornered as a kind of European art house, another European art house kind of director.
Yeah, well, I try not to, I can look at it in retrospect because I think I'm too focused on the process of making stuff and sort of what's the next couple of steps in the process, rather than what am I going to like how's the poster going to look like, what's the finished film going to be. I wanted it to be an investigation or a trip for myself as well. I don't know. Maybe I am trapped in some kind of corner. I just don't know it yet.
I'm sure you're not. I don't want to panic you in any way.
No, that's all right. I'm not easily panicked.
Given the shoot underground, I take my hat off to you. I'm not sure I would be doing that. So I can see that.
All right,
not.
Thanks. Yeah, but I don't know, maybe on a real submarine that would be more challenging. Yeah,
so I suppose there's less of a, I mean, it might be an hour I'm up for the what you did, but on a submarine out in the sea, you know, that's
the real thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not sure I could do that either, but do you have plans for your next feature? Are you still just kind of following this, you know, the festivals and all that for Cutterhead, or do you have a clear kind of idea of what's next for you, what you want to begin up to next?
Yeah, I have a couple of different things. I'm sort of trying to have a combination of working on projects that other people write and initiate, and working as purely a director, but the things where I'm more of an author, I'm working on a couple of things, and one of them is probably also going to be a very physical experience. It's not completely clear to me yet what it is, but it's definitely, you know, where Cutterhead was in this tunnel and in the physical spaces, and the physical space was the backbone of the story, then I'm going to take it, you know, into the body of a character. So the backbone of the story is going to be the development in this character's relationship to their body, and it's going to be about, I guess, power relations in health. So I most people have some idea of that they're going to die someday and what pain feels like and has a relationship to their health. And I want to play around with that, with those sensations and I guess fears as well. So that's a very diffuse way of saying it, but that's the area.
Excellent. That's interesting. It's just because, maybe it's just because you mentioned Cronenberg a few times. It does sound like might be entering Cronenbergian territory a little bit there.
I hope so. I definitely hope so. But also just, but also sort of Greek tragedy territory. Mm. So if I can have two legs and one of them is on the foundation of the Cronenbergian body horror and the other one is on the Greek tragedy, I think I'll see where I can get from that.
Well, that sounds like a very interesting mix and definitely something I'd want to check out.
I'll keep you posted.
Absolutely, do that. And does the project have a name, or is it that all you want to say about it at the moment?
Yeah, it's called. It has a Danish name. It's called Levetid, but it's like it's more of how the lifespan, I guess you could call it in English.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's a great title. I'll think about it. But in Danish,
well, that's the working name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so lifespan, or maybe there's this more complicated word, at least for me, but it's longevity.
Yes.
What does that mean to you, actually, now, as a native English speaker?
Longevity is just, it kind of is, it's synonymous with lifespan. It's the longevity of something if somebody's had a longevitous life, they've had a long life, So,
yeah. So I'm basically. I think the main question I'm asking is what if you could use the lifespan of someone else to expand your own longevity, and also looking at how the positions are in society, and you can be a working class, and you have different expectations of how long you're gonna live and how that life's gonna be, and then you can be on a if you're at the very top, then you might have a different perspective and a different expectation.
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like this one might have a bit of a political element there as well, like a kind of social commentary there as well.
At least an interest. It's gonna be washed out through the process, but that's definitely something that I have. Yeah. That just fills in my mind. So,
yeah.
So
asking some of those questions about privilege and mindset again.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have people discussing at the moment how you get to Mars for a trip, and that's sort of one thing that people are discussing. But then they're the same kind of people are also discussing how can they expand their lifetime from maybe 20, 25 or 30 or 50 years above the expected. And I guess there's a slightly sci-fi element in that as well. There are some interesting, who has access to that kind of technology, if it is technology. And that's, I guess that's where the Greek myth or the Greek tragedy enters.
Yeah. That's who are the gatekeepers to these things.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fascinating. I look forward to checking that out. Keep me posted.
I will.
Once that develops, we can have you back on the show. It's been great to have you on the show today, and hope to talk again soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. And good luck with the festival in the weekend.
Yes. I'll be checking out your film at Dead by Dawn. I'm very much looking forward to it.
That's great. All right. Thank you.
That was my guest, Rasmus, there. And as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, I had a great Dead by Dawn and very much enjoyed Cunnerhead. Although, given how intense and claustrophobic it is, maybe enjoyed is the wrong word. But I'd certainly recommend it. And if you want to see just how claustrophobic the shoot got, you can check out the behind-the-scene videos we have below the episode on the episode page over at newhorrorexpress.com. Also, you can get loads more New Horror Express fun by rate, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes and Stitcher. That is all for now, though. See you in a fortnight's time.